in San Francisco are bringing you today's taped Christian Science lecture by Noel D. Brian Jones. Mr. Brian Jones will be introduced by Mrs. Ruth Murner.
Good evening, everyone. Have you ever thought how wonderful it would be to never be afraid? How really wonderful. Tonight, we're going to hear how this is increasingly possible through the study of Christian Science. The subject of the lecture tonight is the science of being unafraid. The members of this church, Fifth Church of Christ Scientists, warmly welcomes everyone here tonight that we may share this liberating experience with you. Noel D. Brian Jones of Worthing, England, is our lecturer. Mr. Brian Jones has served the Christian Science movement in many capacities. In England, as Committee on Publication. He comes to us here as a member of the Board of Lectureship of the Mother Church, the first Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts. He has been in the public practice of Christian Science many years, the healing work. Recently, he has served as first reader for the Mother Church. It is a very great pleasure to present to you Mr. Brian Jones.
Thank you, Mrs. Murner, and good evening. I'm relieved, and I'm sure Mrs. Murner is relieved, that she got the title of the lecture correct, because I understand that on Saturday one of the newspapers in San Francisco announced the title as The Science of Being Afraid. Well, I hope by the time we've finished this lecture tonight, you'll see that there is no science to being afraid. I wonder, did you ever learn to ride a bicycle? Because if you did, I'm sure you'll remember how you wobbled about, one foot ready to cling to the ground at the slightest lurch. And why was that? Well, because, of course, you were afraid. Afraid you might lose your balance and fall off and hurt yourself. And if your experience was anything like mine, you probably did more than once. And then one day, you finally made it. You made the wonderful discovery that all you really had to do was to get on that bicycle and pedal fearlessly and energetically. You found, in fact, that all the time you'd had within yourself the ability to ride. Well, now, how much better it would have been at the outset to have eliminated that fear through a clearer knowledge of the science, if I might call it that, of bicycle riding. Of course, there were various laws and rules involved, like locomotion, equilibrium, gravitation, balance, and so on. But these didn't give you the ability to ride. You already had that. They just enabled you to put that ability into practice scientifically, and so bring it out. Any ability or talent that you or I may have, even if we haven't discovered it yet, is already within us, waiting to be developed. You know, when somebody accomplishes something outstanding, like winning a gold medal at the Olympics or bringing off a big business deal, you'll sometimes hear somebody say, "Gracious, I didn't think he had it in him." Usually a member of the family. Or perhaps a little more kindly, "Oh, I knew he had it in him all the time." That's mother talking. Well, if we'd known from the start that we had within ourselves the ability to ride that bicycle, we'd never have suffered from fear of falling off. And so consequently, we probably never would have fallen off. And my purpose in this lecture is to show that fear of anything, disease, disaster, war, poverty, the dark, accident, anything at all, can be destroyed. That we have the ability given us by God to do this scientifically. And by scientifically, I mean according to established and provable law. I'm referring specifically, of course, to the science of Christianity, which has a single basic principle, God, and logical and provable rules for the application of this principle to daily life and situations. The word principle means a basis of law or rule which can be used in the application of a science. All Christianity, as you know, accepts the principle of one supreme God, who is almighty, ever-present, ever-active, good. There's a verse in the Bible which shows so clearly the nature of God as good and as the divine principle. With his clear perception of the character and nature of God, the prophet Isaiah depicts him as saying, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness." Well, now just notice that this promise is absolutely unconditional. God doesn't say that if we will think or do or say something, he might help. No, he says, "I will strengthen, I will help, I will uphold." And why? Because I am thy God. In other words, of course I'm going to maintain my own beloved creation, man. It's only natural. And how? With the right hand of my righteousness, with the omnipotent power of my being. And where? Right here. For I am with thee. God is with us everywhere, all the time. So, fear thou not. Be not dismayed. The understanding of God's power and love, present and active within ourselves, is what we're chiefly concerned with this evening. And it is this holy good activity of God's law which destroys fear and all the results of fear. So during the course of this lecture, let's just consider three basic questions. What is the nature of God as the infinite divine principle? How does the understanding of this nature eliminate fear? And how can this understanding be applied to a very prevalent fear, the fear of disease? When I was a small boy, hope you can imagine me as a small boy, there was a text, "God is love," that used to hang on my bedroom wall. And I used to think vaguely that somebody had made a mistake, that it was a grammatical error, and it shouldn't be "God is love," but "God is loving," or "God does love." And strangely enough, it wasn't for many years that I seriously thought about the matter. Not, in fact, until I took up the study of Christian Science. And then I found that in the Bible, and the Holy Bible, by the way, is one of the two textbooks used by students of Christian Science, I found that in the Bible there are several names used for God, one of which is love. So in considering how fear is destroyed by the divine principle, God, love is the most important name for us to think about. Looking back on my early study of Christian Science, I find that what first attracted me to it, and has continued to impress me ever since, is its absolute, simple, practical logic. I wasn't asked to believe anything I couldn't prove once I'd accepted the basic principle. Omnipotent, omnipresent, omniactive God, who is love. You know, a child in school must first accept the basic rules of arithmetic and then work out from those. And until he does that, he won't get his sums right. There was a little girl who went bounding home from school one day in great glee to tell her mother that she'd learned that if she had 3 oranges and her mother gave her 2 more, she'd have 5 oranges. And her mother said, "Well, that's splendid, darling. Now, suppose you had 4 bananas and I gave you another one. How many would you have?" And the little girl thought wildly for a minute and said, "Oh, we haven't done bananas yet, only oranges." Well, you see, that child still had to learn the basic rules. She was still working with the symbols. Well, I had learned as a Christian child, like most Christian children, that God was my loving Father. And now I found that even though I was grown up, that divine fatherhood wasn't removed from me. On the contrary, it became nearer, dearer, clearer, more real, more precious. As through a growing understanding of Christian Science, I came to recognize God as the loving Father of all. And besides love, God is also mind and truth and life and spirit, because these are other names used or implied in the Bible for God. And we can see why. God is shown to be all-wise, all-knowing. Well, then surely he must be the divine mind, the basis of all true thought, the originator of all right ideas. And since the divine principle mind is also love, all right ideas emanate from love. They are loving ideas and lovely ideas. And man, who is governed entirely by the divine principle love, less than the expression of loving, intelligent thought. That thinking which never stops, which just goes on and on and on. Have you ever tried to stop thinking? Because if you have, I'm sure you've found you've just been thinking about trying to stop thinking. Mary Baker Eddy, who made the great discovery that Christianity is exact science, spent nearly 20 years in trying to trace all physical effects back to a mental cause, until eventually, through her own remarkable healing of injuries which neither doctors nor surgeons could reach, she found her mistake in searching for a cause in the human mind. She made the great discovery that God, the divine principle, love, is the only mind and the only cause of every real effect. And besides love and mind, the Bible tells us that God is truth. And again we can see why. Truth is ever present, ever available, just as God is. Truth is unopposable, incontestable, just as God is. You can't oppose truth. You can't contradict a true statement. And Christian Science, like the Bible, accepts God as life, because God is deathless, and of course life is deathless. You can't have dead life. Truth doesn't die. Mind doesn't die. So God is the ever-present, ever-active life of man. God with us. Truth with us. Love with us. This ever-active life of man isn't found through passing on or passing out or passing anywhere. It can be experienced here and now as we lift our thoughts to recognize God as the divine principle, life and love. Love expressed is life experienced. And God is spirit, because spirit is infinite, everywhere, permeates everything. You can't get away from spirit. It isn't material, of course. You can't see it with the eyes or hear it with the ears or touch it with the fingers. But you can feel it in the heart. You can feel the spirit of joy, the spirit of loving kindness, the spirit of dominion, which the divine principle God engenders in the heart of each one of us. You know, when somebody does something unusually kind, don't we say, "I'm deeply touched"? Now that's spirit in action. And man, who is the creation of infinite spirit of God, is and must be a spiritual idea. His identity is entirely spiritual. He can't get outside the orbit of love's conscious care. And God has never removed his fatherhood from man. So, fear thou not, be not afraid. Because God is love and mind and truth and life and spirit, man is governed by the inevitable laws of divine love, of intelligent thought, unerring truth, undying life, and of absolute vital spiritual control. Well, now, the closest, most intimate place to look for this infinity of God's presence is within ourselves. Christ Jesus, who founded Christianity, who taught it and proved it, said in one of his sermons that the kingdom of God is within you. And so it's right here, within ourselves, within our consciousness of God, that we find the love of God, the love which is God. God expresses in man his own spiritual nature, because we read in the Bible that man is the image and likeness of God. So the true spiritual nature of man is a loving nature, not a fearful nature. And anything which seems to suggest the contrary comes from a mistaken sense of man, which in turn comes from a mistaken sense of God. Christ Jesus knew so well the nature of God as love and as the Father of all. He said confidently, "The Father loveth the Son." And one of his students and most intimate friends, John, wrote at some length on this subject, and twice made that statement, which was on my bedroom wall: God is love. Mrs. Eddy had always accepted God as love, but after her great discovery, she came step by step to see him not merely as a loving father, but as the divine principle, love itself. And she refused to believe that man, made in the image and likeness of God, could ever be less than the recipient and the expression of love. She was, in her own life, a wonderful example of fearless living and loving. All who knew her spoke of her great love, which was so much part of her life. And one of her students wrote this about her: "I always feel that the secret of her great achievements could be explained on no other basis than her at-one-ment with God and her boundless spirit of universal love for all mankind. The way Mrs. Eddy said the word love made me feel that she must have loved even a blade of grass under her feet." Divinely impelled to share her discovery of scientific Christianity with all mankind, Mrs. Eddy never wavered until she found that she was able to heal others as she herself had been healed, and through her teaching and writing could enable others to do the same. She proved in her teaching, in her inspired writings, in her establishment of the science of Christianity this great fact, that because the principle of science is love, there's no room for fear in man's experience. Remember a little time back I mentioned that the Bible was one of the two textbooks of Christian science. This is the other one, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, written, of course, by Mrs. Eddy. And this book contains a complete statement of the principle and rules of scientific Christian healing. And one of the basic statements Mrs. Eddy makes in this book is this: God is the principle of divine metaphysics. As there is but one God, there can be but one divine principle of all science. And there must be fixed rules for the demonstration of this divine principle. And then she adds, the vital part, the heart and soul of Christian science, is love. So you see, Christian science isn't cold and abstract. It's warm and practical. It's alive and benevolent. Now, I wonder if, as youngsters, you ever went in for one of those competitions in which we were given a picture containing several mistakes, like a man with two left feet or a car without wheels and so on, and asked to say, what's wrong with this picture? Well, of course, we could only ever win a prize if we knew what should have been right with it, that a man has to have a right foot as well as a left, and a car must have wheels and so on. Well, in just the same way, when we're faced with a picture of disease or fear or discord of any kind, we can say quite as confidently, that's wrong. That's not according to divine fact. Because we know what the divine fact is. That God created man perfect like himself. And he's never changed that perfect creation. If we're ever deceived or made fearful by evil, it isn't because evil is real. It's because we're not clear enough in our thought that only God, only good, is real, any time or in any place. Well then, isn't it logical to conclude that what seems to be fear or disease or evil of any kind just comes from a mistaken sense of what's going on? From a failure to realize that only the divine principle, love, is going on, any time and in any place. Fear experienced means that love is unrecognized. But in order to understand, perhaps, why it is that fear is destroyed by the divine principle, love, we need to understand more clearly the nature of fear. And with this in mind, let's just take a look at the mistakes in the picture of life painted by fear. There are seven of them, and they're listed in the Christian Science textbook under the definition of fear. Here they are: heat, inflammation, anxiety, ignorance, error, desire, caution. Let me just give you those seven again. Heat, inflammation, anxiety, ignorance, error, desire, caution. Let's just spend a minute or two in looking at each one of these from the standpoint that fear is only a wrong, negative sense which can be corrected by the true, positive sense of love right where fear seems to be. First of all, heat and inflammation. Whether we consider these as physical or mental, whether we're thinking of an inflamed portion of the body or a mob inflamed by hatred and fear, heat and inflammation stem from failure to recognize the cool, calm, regulating presence of divine love, the principle which governs man and the entire universe in perfect harmony. But as we do recognize the presence of love right where heat or inflammation seems to be, this regulates the system and brings the temperature to normal. After all, don't we sometimes say to somebody who's getting a little heated in argument, if we use the vernacular of today, now, cool it. You can't have inflammation and full faith in God at the same time. The Apostle James so reasonably commented that you cannot have sweet water and bitter from the same source. Either God is the infinite, ever-present, divine principle, love, or there's no God, no principle. But of course there's a God, and he's right here. The love, the mind, the truth, the life, which we can find right here within ourselves. Just think of it. Every moment of every minute of every hour of every day and night, the mighty power of God is present to cast out fear and all the results of fear. Now, I can speak with some authority about this, because my first healing in Christian Science was just that sort of a healing. Many years ago, we in England had an appalling epidemic of what was called Spanish influenza. Though why we blamed the Spaniards for it, I was never able to find out. But my gradual recovery from this disease under medical care left me in an extremely weak physical and nervous state. And in this condition, I was sent away to stay with some relatives who were Christian Scientists. And on my arrival, my cousin, seeing my plight, asked if I wouldn't try Christian Science. And I refused, saying that nothing and nobody could possibly help me. That was the sort of state I was in. But fortunately for me, he persisted. He persisted in explaining to me something of the available healing power of God. That healing taught me that God has never made a single cause for anxiety. Right where anxiety would try and raise its head, there instead is the love of our Heavenly Father, waiting to be experienced through faith. The scientific correction of these mistakes in the picture of life painted by fear is accomplished by absolute faith in God, through a spiritual understanding of the divine principle, love. There's a text on the mantle of an old hotel in England. Fear knocked at the door. Faith answered, and no one was there. Now let's get back to these mistakes in the picture of life presented by fear. We've dealt with heat, inflammation, and anxiety. The next one is ignorance. Well, God, we've seen, is the infinite, all-knowing mind. Well, now, where could ignorance have any place in this infinity of all-knowing? Why, nowhere, of course. Fear is always of the unknown, an ignorant dread of what might happen, like falling off that bicycle. But when we know, really know, the power and presence of God, of love, and when we know there is no other power and no other presence, we just won't suffer from ignorant doubts. We'll claim our unity with that all-knowing divine mind right now. And the next mistake in the picture is error. Well, truth, we've seen, is one of the names for God. And error is a word freely used in Christian Science to designate that which does not measure up to the divine standard of truth. That which, in fact, claims to be the opposite of truth. But when we've really accepted truth as God, as ever present, as ever available, we just won't be troubled by erroneous suggestions. For instance, suppose it was written on a blackboard here that 2 and 2 are 5. Supposing it was carved all round the wall that 2 and 2 are 5. That wouldn't disturb you, excepting that it would look a little untidy. But because you know that 2 and 2 are 4, and you know that you know it, you'd simply say, well, that's wrong, because you know what's right. Well, in the same way, when you're faced with a picture of disease or fear or discord of any kind, you simply say, well, I know that's wrong, and I know that I know it, because I know what's right. I know the power and the presence and the love of God, and I know that I know it. And in that way, you just will not be disturbed by erroneous suggestions. The sixth mistake in the picture is desire, which may be said to be an incomplete, uncertain sense of God's availability. Desire is this sense of reaching out for something one believes one hasn't got. The sense of lacking, yearning for something to satisfy. Most of the crime, the bloodshed, the misery in the world today comes from this false sense, this failure to realize that God, the divine principle, gives all good. And because of this, man has all good. He doesn't have to go out and get it from somewhere. He has it now as a condition of his spiritual nature. You know, the man who calls himself a go-getter is just one who thinks of himself as a haven't-gotter. You see, man, as the Bible tells us, is the image and likeness of God, like your image reflected in a mirror. Well, now, when you look in a mirror, you don't expect to see half the image and the rest gradually to form a bit at a time. In fact, you'd be considerably startled if it did. No, it has all its color, form, outline, and activity from you right at that moment of reflection. And it doesn't have to wait for it. And it doesn't have to get it from somewhere. So you, each one of you, in your true spiritual nature and identity, have at this moment all the divine characteristics of God by reflection. You don't have to wait for them. You don't have to get them from somewhere. You don't have to desire them. Of course, it's all right to desire good, naturally. But if we are just content with going on desiring, aren't we subscribing to the belief that we're lacking? Doesn't wanting deny having? Isn't this what lies behind the drunkard's belief that he can gain some satisfaction through intoxication? Behind the thief's conviction that he can enrich himself by stealing? Or the adolescent yearning for some experience to satisfy? Man is at this moment the complete, blissfully satisfied image of God. That's the true picture. And as we recognize this within ourselves, we'll find our true spiritual natures as sons and daughters of God, not needing anything. Not needing to desire anything. Well, now that's 6 out of the 7 mistakes we've found. That might entitle us to second prize, perhaps, but don't let's be satisfied with that. Let's go on for the first prize, what Paul called the crown of rejoicing. And look at this 7th mistake, which is labeled caution. Now, caution may be said to be a tentative, uncertain sense of God's availability. Caution, of course, claims to be wisdom. But can it ever be said to be really wise to doubt God's loving care and protection? You know, it's caution which says, I don't think it's wise to do that at my age. How often we say it isn't wise to do something, when all the time, if we're quite honest, what we really mean is that we're afraid to do it. But in proportion, as we trust God to guide every step of our lives at any age, we'll take those steps fearlessly, joyously, confidently, and with certainty of success. Chance plays no part in our lives when we're certain of God's protection and guidance. You know, Jesus did not say, ask and it shall be given you if you're lucky. Luck or chance has no principle, whereas God is the divine principle, love. There's an interesting difference between fearlessness and courage. Courage is a fine human quality, of course, but doesn't it imply that there is something to be afraid of, but that we're facing up to it bravely? Whereas the fact is that God has never made a single thing of which we can be legitimately afraid. Therefore, he made man fearless rather than courageous. The scientific correction of these mistakes in the picture of life presented by fear is accomplished not so much by courage as by fearless, positive, prayerful, reverent recognition of the power and presence of love, right where fear seems to be. There's nothing and nobody in the whole wide world that can possibly make you afraid if you have the love of God in your hearts. Christian Science accepts as fact that God is the only cause, because he's the only creator. Now, every cause must have an effect, or else it wouldn't be a cause. Do you get that? Every cause must have an effect, or else it wouldn't be a cause. And for the same reason, every effect must have a cause, or else it couldn't be an effect. That's a scientific statement. Moreover, every effect must show the nature of its cause, so that all that God creates must of necessity be like God, the effect manifesting the cause. And man, who is the highest creation of God, just think of that. I'm speaking of the spiritual identity of each one of you, the highest creation of God, must be and is the effect of love's loving. Now, Christian Science tackles fear on this positive basis. It doesn't accept that fear is something and then try to get rid of that something. No, it accepts completely that text on my bedroom wall, God is love. And it accepts something else that John said, there is no fear in love. There's no fear in God. And because man is the image and likeness of God, there's no fear in man. That's a scientific, logical statement which heals. And in no area has this been found to be more practical than in the healing of disease. Most doctors today admit that fear is a basic cause of disease. Well, then it's obvious that when you can remove the fear, you can heal the disease. You can see how a mental fear has a physical effect by the way it causes the blood to drain from the face or the heart to start beating quickly. Any of you who have ever had to perform in public will know only too well that awful sinking sensation in the pit of the stomach. Fear. I'm an authority on that. But I want to stress this fact because it's important. What we're apt to think of as physical conditions are primarily, if not wholly, mental. True substance, for instance, is the expression of truth and understanding. Substance means understanding. So what we're apt to think of as material substance, material body or material world, is a mistaken sense of substance. And so, in the healing of disease, Christian Science deals with the basic fear, not with the material conditions. When fear caused you to fall off that bicycle, you didn't blame the bicycle. You didn't decide to operate on the bicycle or get it a new pump or something like that. No. In the same way, when fear upsets the balance of your bodily health, you shouldn't ignore the fear and just dose the body or operate upon it. Disease is ignorance of the power of God to heal. And that ignorance has a physical effect, which we call disease. So it's obvious that when you can remove the ignorant fear, then the body will take care of itself. It will resuscitate itself through the absence of fear. You know, if you saw a cat arching its back in fear of a dog, you wouldn't want to treat it for curvature of the spine. You'd simply know the cat was scared and probably remove the dog. And so heal the cat. It really is as simple as that. Christ Jesus, in his healing ministry, so often approached one needing healing with those wonderful words, "Fear not, be not afraid." In a wonderful gesture of genuine affection, he actually touched a leper, which was supposed to be a fatal thing to do. But in doing this, he proved two things. First, that leprosy is not something to be afraid of. And secondly, that it is something to be healed through love. With his same fearless compassion, he healed lameness, blindness, dumbness, all sorts of disease. He wasn't afraid to be seen in the company of known sinners in an attempt to lift their concept of themselves to a better one. In that perfect spiritual being, which is your being and mine, there's no fear, latent or blatant. Neither is there anything in the whole of God's kingdom that can make you afraid. And that kingdom, remember, as Jesus said, is within you. Mrs. Eddy, in her book, Retrospection and Introspection, makes this remarkable statement. Science saith to fear, "You are the cause of all sickness, but you are a self-constituted falsity. You are darkness, nothingness. You are without hope and without God in the world. You do not exist and have no right to exist, for perfect love casteth out fear." Let me just tell you how this works. There was a young girl, a friend of ours, on vacation with her mother, and one day she returned to the house with such alarming symptoms that for the sake of small children in the house, the mother felt it was right to call in a doctor. And the doctor took a very grave view of the case and said that it was polio, and that according to the laws prevalent in England, he would have to notify the medical officer of health who would call later in the day. Well, after he'd gone, the mother telephoned to a Christian Science practitioner. And for the sake of those of you who are attending a Christian Science lecture for the first time, let me explain that a Christian Science practitioner is one who devotes his or her time to the scientific healing of disease through prayer. Well, the mother telephoned to this practitioner and told him of the situation. And she later said that he said something like this to her. "Now listen. Let's rejoice that in the whole of God's kingdom there has never been a single case of polio. Polio is the greatest hoax which has ever been perpetrated upon mankind. because first, it claims to have a power it cannot possibly possess, since all power belongs to God. And secondly, it claims to act through ignorance and fear in the face of the all-knowing mind and the ever-present divine love. And then he went on to say, that girl is a citizen in the kingdom of heaven, into which kingdom, according to the Bible, has never entered anything which worketh abomination or maketh a lie. By reason of her divine citizenship, she is immune. She doesn't have to be immunized by the injection of serum. She is already immune by the inspiration of spirit. Well, of course, both the mother and the girl were greatly comforted by this, and also by the fact that they knew the practitioner would be continuing his prayerful work for them. So much so that by the time the medical officer of health called later in the day, the girl was already so much better that he expressed some doubt as to whether it was polio, but it looked like it, and he said he'd call again the next day. But by the next morning, the girl was absolutely healed. In fact, she took a round trip of about 60 miles that day in the course of her vacation. And that was the end of it. But there are two things which followed which are interesting. Just in case we might have thought it was a matter of mistaken diagnosis, the doctor's secretary, who is a friend of ours and knew our interest in the girl, told me that on the doctor's record card there was the word polio, with no expression of doubt whatsoever. And the other interesting point was that that medical officer of health never called again. It was as though the whole thing had been completely wiped out of his consciousness. Since Mrs. Eddy reinstated in Christian Science the Christ method of healing disease, thousands have had the joy of proving it. And so can you. No matter what the disease is called, no matter what the prophecy of its future development may be, because it is based on ignorance and fear, you can denounce it as lawless and powerless. Disease of any kind is against the law of God. So whenever fear, disease, discord, unhappy human relationships, any wrong picture presents itself to you, you can declare quite confidently, there's a law against that. Oh, that's against the law. There's no fear, no hate, no misunderstanding which can't be scientifically healed by a greater sense of the presence and power of divine love, expressed in genuine affection, compassion, and understanding. This love we're speaking of as the expression of divine love, whether in the home or around the conference table, in business or in politics, isn't a sort of sentimental gush. It's a deep-seated well-wishing, a sincere desire for the greatest good to all concerned, for the will of God to be seen and done. I once heard a woman say that she truly learned to pray, "Thy will be done, Father, and if I don't like it, take no notice." Universal love may be seen where international fear seems to be. It destroys the false sense of personal domination, political so-called power, and lifts human thought to recognize the dignity of man and the kingdom of heaven upon earth within you. As we become more conscious of this activity of the divine principle within ourselves, we'll find new ways of expressing it in our lives. A mother was explaining to her small son that we're all in this world to help others. And after some deep thought, he said, "Well, what are the others here for?" Well, to him, that was a perfectly legitimate question. But the only one which should concern you and me is our own expression of divine love. To the others, we are the others. as we daily live this love in our common round, we'll find it expanding in our experience, bringing to us great, great blessings. Blessings which are never in disguise. The healing power of Christian Science lies in the operation of divine principle, and no other operation is ever really necessary. This divine law flows through every avenue of your conscious being. It removes whatever needs to be removed. It relieves whatever needs to be relieved. It reveals whatever needs to be revealed. And it heals whatever needs to be healed. Because it destroys fear. There's nothing so blinding as fear. And nothing so illuminating as love. Just over a year ago, when I was lecturing to the armed forces in the Far East, in Korea and Vietnam, I heard a young soldier say that the initials F-E-A-R stand for false evidence appearing real. Fear is always too bad to be true. What wonderful assurance we get in the Bible, don't we? For instance, in Paul's remarkable letter to Timothy, God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Well, now I do hope this evening you've been going along with me and learning to ride. Finding within yourself the power to be what God made you. Fearless, upright, free. You probably got rid of that old bicycle years ago. But the spiritual cycle of unfolding good is still right there within you. Ride it fearlessly. Your father has firm hold of the saddle and he won't let you fall. Because he loves you. So, get on it and go. Good night.
Members of Fifth Church of Christ Scientists San Francisco have brought you today's taped Christian Science lecture by Noel D. Bryan Jones. The next taped Christian Science lecture on KBRG San Francisco will be a week from today, next Thursday at 1 p.m., May 7th.